Blog Talk Radio.
Hello and welcome into a jam-packed edition of Around the Nest, Jay Talking Our Way Around the Blue Jays Organization. I'm Jesse Goldberg-Strassler with the Lansing Lugnuts. You'll hear from a lot of broadcasters on this week's show because the trade deadline just passed, and we want to learn more about the players that the Blue Jays acquired. For example, from the Potomac Nationals, the Blue Jays added a right-hander named Kyle Johnston, picked him up in a deal for Daniel Hudson. Let me bring in now the voice of Potomac. That would be Eric Brammer. Eric, how are you?
Doing well, Jesse. Thanks for having me on.
Well, good to have you. And let me ask you immediately, all right, Kyle Johnston, what are the Blue Jays getting?
Short answer is you got our best starter, so we're going to be without him for the final month. But you got a durable, big right-handed starting pitcher who a lot of scouts think might eventually profile as a reliever. But I've liked what I've seen from him in a starting role. He took great strides this year, adding a third pitch as changeup, and that helped him get deeper and deeper into ball games. Whether he ends up as a starter or a reliever, I think you've got yourself a pretty good pitcher.
What's his stuff?
He's got two different fastballs, a four-seamer that sits comfortably 92 to 94. We saw it on a stadium gun here at 97 in the Carolina League, but I'd say mid-90s is probably where he sits as a starter. He's got what he calls a curveball, but his pitching coach says it's somewhere in between a curveball, a slider, and a slurve. Whatever it is, it moves a lot, and he gets a lot of strikeouts with it. And then, as I mentioned, he added a changeup this year. Going from being a two-pitch guy to a three-pitch guy has really helped him take that next step forward.
I'm going month-to-month with him right now. In April, he had an 8.68 ERA, league batted 295. May, the ERA dropped out at 203, league batted 200. June, it did jump up a little bit back to 271, the ERA 3.65. And then in July, the league was batting 196 against him. How did he progress from when you first saw him in April all the way up until when he got traded?
It might sound reductive, but I think he just stayed away from the ugly starts. His April numbers were marred by a couple short starts where he was unable to get deep into the ballgame, a couple big innings made the numbers look a lot worse than he really was. But I think the one thing that they've tried to work with him on is keeping his delivery repeatable and in control. Anytime you've got a big guy like that with so much potential in the right arm, sometimes he can get a little bit overamped at the beginning of ball games. By keeping his delivery the same every time, he was able to harness his stuff more, and we saw that gradually get better over the course of the season.
What was he like as a guy around the clubhouse?
Definitely a leader. It was tough to see him go because everyone liked him. Of course, we're happy for him. And anytime you get traded for a major leaguer, that is quite a vote of confidence as he takes his next step forward in his career. But he was the type of guy that liked the big moment. He was the opening night starter. He got the first start of the second half as well. And anytime you've got someone with his stuff, that might sound obvious to give him those assignments, but he handled them well. And I think he has the makeup to either be a rotation piece, someone you can depend on every fifth day, or handle the stress of a late-inning situation if the need arises.
That's excellent. This is really good to hear. What was the team's reaction when they found out that he had been traded?
Disappointment for sure, because he was a well-liked guy in the clubhouse, and he was the most dependable part of this rotation. Anytime in the minor leagues, you lose a guy who's been a part of the club all year, you have to make an adjustment. You know that as well as anybody, Jesse. But this is a guy who was with this club from the last month of 2018 onwards. He did not miss a start. Pretty much every time he went out on the mound, he gave his team a chance to win. And I think the surprise was not that he left us, but that he left the organization. Because the next move that we were expecting was to see him go up to AA. And any time that he took the mound, I think we felt pretty good in our chance to win. He was actually scheduled to start the day that he was traded. And with the Peanuts in a pennant chase here in the Carolina League, we had to do some shuffling around and try and figure out how to win that ball game. But we ended up doing so, and we'll have to do without him here for the final month.
Eric Brammer is the voice of the Potomac Nationals, the team that Kyle Johnston was pitching for before the Blue Jays acquired him in exchange for Daniel Hudson in the trade right before the deadline. You can find Eric via Twitter Go to at Eric, E-R-I-K, underscore, Bremer, B-R-E-M-E-R. And Eric, thank you very much for giving us your insights.
My pleasure, Jesse. Thanks for having me.
All right, beautiful. We are going to hear from broadcasters throughout this week's show in terms of the new players picked up by the Toronto Blue Jays. The deals at the deadline, for example, Marcus Stroman was traded in exchange for Anthony Kay, AAA level, so we'll hear from Syracuse. And Simeon Woods Richardson, A advanced level, we'll hear from Columbia. And then other deals as well. For example, David Phelps was traded for Thomas Hatch. Hatch was at the AA level for the Chicago Cubs, so we'll hear from the voice of the AA Tennessee Smokies. I'm Jesse Goldberg-Strassler. This is Around the Nest, Jay talking away around the Toronto Blue Jays organization. Let me bring in, though, Rob Fay, the voice of the Vancouver Canadiens. Rob, how are you?
I am well. I'm on the side of the road. I'm at Dead Man's Pass, somewhere in Oregon, but I didn't want to miss my time slot because I know you're busy today.
Well, let's let the dead men pass you by, shall we? And let's talk about your Vancouver Canadiens, who every time I'm looking over, I'm seeing performances that catch my eye. Latest, how good was Alex Nolan yesterday?
Alex Nolan might be the best-kept secret on our team, and you take a kid out of Brock University, a Canadian kid out of an Ontario school, and you don't put a lot of merit into it. You think, oh, non-drafted free agent, we'll just let it ride until it bucks you. He's been one of our most dependable and consistent starters. He was sitting in the low 90s yesterday and just smooth as silk. And the thing that you like about him, a little bit older, a lot of composure, and a guy that I almost assume is going to be coming to Lansing before the end of the season. And if not, it's a missed opportunity because he's been pitching extraordinarily well.
That's good to hear. I'm sorry to take him potentially away from you. We wouldn't mind. Among your hitters, we've been talking about Yoermann Rodriguez since the start. Let's talk about him again, but we're going to talk about him in context of your All-Stars. What did you think of your three Northwest League All-Stars?
All very deserving. And Yoermann Rodriguez right now, it takes me a while to go back to think of a hitter that's been as consistent of him. I would probably have to go all the way back to Franklin Barreto back in 2014 to have a guy that has been this locked in this long and this consistent. It's really fun to watch coming to the ballpark, knowing that whether he's hitting sixth or second or fourth, you're always going to get a multi-hit game from him. He's hitting nearly 380 this year and hasn't really bucked below 360. And it's just something that you come to the ballpark almost anticipating, which is both a blessing and a curse.
And then how about your other two All-Stars?
Well, the other two are pretty self-explanatory to me. Trevor Schwecke is the pocket knife. He's the guy that you pull out. He can play first, second, third, short, whatever you need, he can do, and he does it well. He's hitting right around 300 as well. Again, I'm probably going to say this until he leaves me. He reminds me of Shane Opitz so much, and to me that's a compliment because Opitz in 2011 was fantastic for the Canadiens. And Adam Klofenstein, he's really starting to show why the Blue Jays should be overpaid for him. We talk about dominating performances. The only thing that makes me a little concerned with him while he's putting together these great performances is max effort. And it's something that you don't like using with a pitcher. You always like saying, oh, he throws easy. He looks easy. He's young. He throws with every inch that he has. But it's still special, and it's still something that I think the Blue Jays should be thrilled to have in their system.
We've got another guy to talk about, and this might be the headliner. Today he's going to make his second start, I see, as a member of the Vancouver Canadiens. What was your first impression of Alek Manoah?
Larger than life. And the beauty of it is he is larger than life. His personality is big. He has immediately embraced both Canada and Vancouver. And the thing that I like about him, he's running on the mound. He works quick. He's a guy that comes out with a game plan. He's scheduled to go today for us. He's going to go two innings as opposed to the one that we had for him in Spokane. But the thing that he wants a game plan. He sits down. He says, all right, here's what we're going to do. Here's how we're going to attack these hitters. And he's a student of the game. And the best part about him, put a baseball in his hand, and you can't even see the baseball. I've never seen bigger hands on a baseball player in my life. So I don't know if that's a good thing or a bad thing. But he truly is a 6'7" behemoth. I want to say he's in at over 300 pounds right now. Like, he's a big, big body, Jesse. And the fact that the Blue Jays went and took a chance on him, I think it's going to pay off.
I think that's a good thing to say that a guy has massive hands. That was the accusation that was levied at Sudden Sam McDowell, was batters would say he would take his massive right hand and he would warp the baseball to whatever shape he needed it to be, and then he could get some good spin on it. So here's to Alek Manoah squeezing every last ounce out of that baseball.
Well, the one thing that was brought up to me, Jesse, and it was a comment, it was kind of a weird comparison, is they made the comparison between Alek Manoah and Randy Johnson. And now, of course, I'm not going to make a comparison on any level other than this. The wingspan of Alek Manoah is something that has a lot of people talking. By the time his delivery, by the time he lets that ball go from his fingertips, you're talking like 51, 52 feet away from the plate. And the guy's throwing in the low to mid-90s. And it was an interesting comparison because he said that's what made the big unit so good. Is A, he could hide the baseball, but B, he had this albatross-like wingspan, and that's something that Manoah has as well. So it is just, it takes you a couple of days to get used to just the sheer size of him. He's bigger than Nate Pearson. He's bigger than anybody in the system as far as just a presence on the mound. And I've been smitten with him since the day he landed in Vancouver.
At Rob Fay to find the voice of the Vancouver Canadians on Twitter. They are at Tri-City tonight, tomorrow, and then Sunday. And then the All-Star break, Pioneer League All-Stars against Northwest League All-Stars from Boise, Idaho, the humanitarian city. Rob, thank you very much.
Take care, Jesse. Thank you.
Beautiful. Good to hear about the Blue Jays first rounder this year. Now let's bring in one of the newest let's talk about one of the new acquisitions. Let me bring in Michael Tricarico with the Syracuse Mets to talk about Anthony Kay. Michael, how are you?
I'm great. How are you doing, Jesse?
I'm doing well. All right, the Blue Jays get Anthony Kay. What did they get with this left-hander?
Well, first of all, in terms of character-wise, you get a very high-character guy in Anthony Kay, one of the nicest guys to be around, certainly an addition in that way to any clubhouse that he's going to be in. In terms of the type of pitcher he is, look, when he came to AAA for the first time this season, he came with very high expectations. He dominated at a pretty high level in AA when he was with Binghamton. But when he got to Syracuse, his first couple of AAA starts came right before the All-Star break. And to put it mildly, they were not very good. He struggled. He couldn't locate his secondary pitches as well as it seemed like he had been doing in double A. And I think he realized that the jump from double A to triple A is a pretty darn big one. I say it a little bit. I think out of all the minor league levels, the jump from double A to triple A is probably the biggest of them all. And when you look at Kay, I think the All-Star break was the best thing that happened to him because he went to the Futures game, pitched an inning at the Futures game, was great there. And I think sometimes from a psychological standpoint, all it takes is one good outing when you're in the midst of a struggle to turn it all around. Because I will tell you, his next starts after the All-Star break, he looked like a completely different pitcher. I won't say it was night and day from pre-All-Star break to post-All-Star break, but it was pretty darn close. And I think the biggest thing I noticed was his confidence level right after the All-Star break was at an all-time high. And I really do think his Futures game appearance really changed the tide for him. Having that good outing really helped him out because after the All-Star break, he was stellar. Confidence was there. He worked with our pitching coach, Royce Ring, on his curveball a little bit. Just changed where he was locating it. Our coaching staff wanted him to be able to throw pitches, not just pounding guys inside, but to be able to work outside to batters. That's one thing that he had started working on with our Syracuse coaching staff. And I'll tell you, it was really working because he's got a great fastball. His fastball, mid-90s fastball, it's a great pitch that he can consistently throw for strikes. But when he is throwing his secondary pitches for strikes, look out because he is one of the best young pitchers that I saw in a very short time period when he was with Syracuse, again, after the All-Star break. Because if you look at his numbers right now, they don't look great, but it's only because of his first couple of starts in AAA.
Yeah, that's my follow-up question. I think a lot of Blue Jays fans are looking at his numbers with Syracuse and his debut with Buffalo and saying, uh-oh. So you are not feeling that way at all.
Yeah, exactly. And it was his first couple of starts, three starts right before the All-Star break, where he just got shelled. And I don't think there was like one specific thing that you could point to say this is what went wrong. I think it was just that big jump and the fact that he wasn't really able to throw his secondary pitches consistently for strikes. And right off the top, I remember getting asked by a couple of people who knew he was a top prospect. They went, oh, you know, that they didn't see the games or may have seen the numbers. And they just said, well, were the numbers misleading? And he looked good. And to be honest, he didn't look good. It's not just that the numbers were bad. It's that he didn't look great. But give him credit for putting the work in, for making the adjustments that needed to be made. And like I said, when he came back right after the All-Star break, I mean, he just got after it. And again, I think those secondary pitches are the ones that you can credit to the big transition for him, being able to throw those consistently for strikes where he was able to get swings and misses. Because early on, those first few starts here with Syracuse, it's not just that he was giving up hits, it's that he was giving up hard hit balls. And that completely changed after his appearance in the Futures game.
Lastly, Michael, it seems just from Twitter that he's got a great personality. What is he like as a guy?
It's actually funny because some of the people I had talked to saw some of his tweets and how he had tweeted at, I think it was Cut 4, looking for a new headshot or just a little bit of a Photoshop job to get him in some Toronto gear, and how he was asking some people from Toronto or just Canadians in general just about some cultural questions. That, from some of the people I talked to, isn't necessarily what Anthony is like. He's known as being more of a laid-back guy. He does have a fun personality, don't get me wrong, but it's more of a laid-back type of personality. So I think some of those tweets actually came as a surprise to some people who had gotten to know him. But he is a fun guy to be around. He is, just in the minimal interactions I've had with him, it seems like a little more of a quiet guy. But I think that coming to a team like Syracuse probably helped him a little bit, because the Syracuse Mets have a lot of veteran guys, a lot of guys that I think Anthony was able to learn from. And it's the type of clubhouse where having those major league vets can help prepare you for what you might see in the major leagues, where, you know, our team in Syracuse is a little bit different than a lot of other AAA teams that you might see, just with the amount of major league experience, more than 10,000 games of major league experience on the Syracuse club. So I think that's another thing where the time Anthony spent in AAA with Syracuse can only help him here, the you know, as he continues his rise towards what I think can be a really good major league career. And we're actually in Buffalo right now for a weekend series against the Bison, so I'm looking forward to hopefully saying hi to him and see how he's doing. And I know a bunch of our other guys are looking forward to seeing him as well.
That's beautiful. Michael Tricarico on Twitter at TrickyDNS7. Michael calling Syracuse Mets games. And we wish you well. Michael and I go back to the Midwest League when it was with the Fort Wayne Tin Caps. Really good to hear your voice. And thank you very much for your insights.
Hey, Jesse, it's been great talking to you. Hope all is well, and look forward to chatting again pretty darn soon here.
Oh, agreed. For Michael with Syracuse, let me bring in Jim Tarabocchia with the A Advanced Dunedin Blue Jays. Jim, we've talked about the players who are joining the Jays organization. What's everybody's thoughts on Cal Stevenson getting traded away to the Houston system?
Well, I think there's always going to be sadness because of nostalgia in just a short time. What he's done here the last couple of months has been nothing short of spectacular, especially with the way that he started. And I've talked about him very highly with being the type of guy that I would build my organization around, and a guy I try to keep in my organization for a very, very long time, transitioning from a player to a coach. And I think he offers a lot of value to any organization that he plays for and that he's a part of. So I think there's some sadness, and certainly this one stings. I think there's a lot of understanding that this is you know, the tough side of the business. And I think everything sort of eased up a little bit last night with a late night win going into the weekend. You know, possible guys who are on their way here that may help this ball club here in down the stretch in the second half, and hopefully in the playoffs as well. So, you know, it's part of that up and down chart, if you will, of a season. that everybody who's associated with the team has to go through. And, you know, obviously we're no different from that. And I think, especially from my perspective, now doing this for 5 years in professional baseball, I understand that changes happen every day, whether they be big or small, you know, personnel or not. So it's just one of those things that certainly stings, and we wish Cal the best. And he's in a great organization. He was and now is again. And I think he's going to have a great career, and we keep pushing forward here, you know, with a big weekend series against Bradenton. And then we've got Clearwater next week for a four-game series, and we've got 8 games against them here in the next 2 weeks. So we're just trying to get focused and get going here down the stretch in August.
You said late-night baseball. Yesterday, you started game 2 of 2 at 10:29 p.m., and the game took 1 hour and 57 minutes to play 7 innings. Is that the latest at night that you've ever broadcasted?
Right around there, yeah, probably. I think Tampa, or when we were at Tampa earlier in the month, that was pretty close as well. I think we started right around the same time. But unfortunately, the weather has not been very good down in Florida here in the last couple of weeks or so, and we've been battling the elements, if you will. Mother Nature's not been very cooperative. She's been cooperative for the most part here to Dunedin the last couple of years, not so much this year. And we've talked about the extraneous circumstances that this team has so far had to go through this year. But you know what? Picking up that win yesterday, it was huge for us to salvage the series, and hopefully it takes us into the weekend with some momentum. And I think also when you look at this team now, I mean, they're going to be well rested. They were able to come in later today, so back at home, get a chance here to work on some things at home. And and they're pretty much for the most part home the next week or so, you know, with Clearwater as well, going to Clearwater, which is a 10-minute trip down the road. So, you know, a big win last night, and we're looking forward to kind of being home here for a while.
And now you've got Simeon Woods Richardson, I presume, in the starting rotation. Things are going to get pretty interesting around Vancouver. Let me ask you, though, was Graham Spraker's starting performance the most notable performance by any player this past week?
It was, and with Graham, too, it was the first complete – I mean, you know, you want to call it a complete game, I do. I mean, 7 innings, fine. You know, it was a doubleheader, but that was the first complete game from a Dunedin pitcher here this year. So, you know, I think with Graham, it's just been an excellent year for him. He's opened up a lot of eyes within the organization. I think a lot of people are impressed by his work. And I'm certainly impressed by what he's done. And it was a very good performance last night. You know, to be able to command all your pitches the way he did last night and keep that Fort Myers team off balance. They've got some good hitters over there. And to keep those guys off balance, I was pretty impressed with his performance last night. And, you know, I continue to look forward to what he will bring here in August and down the stretch run as well, whether it be piggybacking or getting the start. Also, you know, for him, it doesn't really matter if he starts or he piggybacks or he comes out of the bullpen. He's just kind of a steady Eddie type guy, and I think that's what a lot of people like about him. And I think that's a huge key to his success as well.
At Jim Terra on Twitter, a Dunedin Blue Jays squad that lost Cal Stevenson, that is gaining Simeon Woods Richardson, and it's going to be fascinating to watch coming up. Jim, thank you very much.
All right, Jesse, thank you. Have a good weekend.
All right. And now let me bring in Zach Helton with the Bluefield Blue Jays, the Jays Appalachian League affiliate, largely untouched by the trade deadline, and yet still they're doing what they do, which is scoring runs. Zach, how are you?
I'm fantastic, Jesse. How are you?
Let me ask you about your Brazilian. Am I remembering right? Is Leonardo Jimenez from Brazil or is he from Panama?
I think he's from Panama, but the kid, wherever he's from, he is fun to watch. Every time I come to the ballpark, I usually get there a few hours early, you know, per usual. And anybody with a bigger smile than Leonardo Jimenez's face at the ballpark, there's something probably wrong with him. This kid is always smiling. He is always excited to be on the field. And in transitions to his game, he just flows so smooth on the base paths, running the bases, and then in the infield. I don't think, he's had an error that's cost the Jays anything this year, but, man, he and Miggy Geraldo both rolling two in the middle, even with David Schneider now kind of getting a few times at second base. Those three guys are fun to watch in the infield.
Well, and that's so young, too. How much are you seeing their youth in terms of inexperience, and how much are you seeing their youth in terms of great raw ability?
Yeah, it feels like Miggy and Leonardo both just have so much more growth, but in that aspect, they are, I think, heads and shoulders above guys their age in fielding and just realizing how to be a professional. They both come to the ballpark every day, and they're hustling, to and from BP and stations, whatever Luis Hurtado has them guys doing, and they're just having fun. And that's the best part about it is these are kids playing a kid's game, and they're out there enjoying it. And I think it kind of draws other guys into it. You know, Schneider's in on the mix. PK is right there with them every day doing some fun drills, and Angel Camacho as well. Those guys, they have fun getting better. And I think that's the key for not only Bluefield, but just the entire Toronto organization. These guys keep getting better, and they enjoy the game. And, you know, we had Dennis for years here at Bluefield, and now we have Luis Hurtado. Those guys keep it upbeat and fresh. And I think those guys, Luis Hurtado especially this year, is in the right spot with these guys. He is a tremendous manager, very hands-on and making the right decisions. And you can tell in these young guys, they enjoy playing for him.
Let me ask you about a new guy who's joined you. You've seen a lot of Schneider, relatively, especially because he was here last year. Leonardo Jimenez, Miguel Araldo, they've been there since the very start of this year. Justin Ammons is an outfielder out of the University of Tennessee, and I'm used to the Blue Jays signing guys as free agents after the draft in June. Not on July the 16th, they signed a Tennessee volunteer outfielder. They sent you Ammons. You've seen him for three games. What have you seen?
Well, last night in the loss, we went to 11. Ammons came in late to pinch run in the 10th inning. He was the first runner on at second. He came around and scored that inning, what ended up being the tying run. And then he had two RBIs in the next inning. This kid is special. He is a speedster. And when I get to the ballpark, one of the first things is, as many others do, look at the transactions. I was like, who is this Ammons kid? I've got to learn about him. I ended up on his Huddle football page. He's a shutdown corner. So I think I mentioned it on the broadcast. You take Ammons, Reyes, Sloniger, Camacho, and Morris, including Rivera and Jimenez, who could probably learn the game of football rather quickly. I think you put the Bluefield Blue Jays up against anyone else in the Appy League on a football field, they're going to come out on top. So, man, this kid has so much athleticism. He ran down a few fly balls the other night that I thought, who in the world would have got to that? But Ammons is going to be a special player. He's got the bunny tool, especially to go with his speed. I think his bat's got a little bit to go, but, first week I've seen him. So the guy has got plenty of time to grow. And me being a Virginia Tech fan, I'm not real keen on Tennessee Volunteers, but I think I can make an exception for Ammons. He's going to be a tremendous ball player for the Jays for a long time.
Let me wrap up with your leadoff man. Man, is Eric Rivera on a hot streak. He is 10 for his last 18, plus a walk. He hasn't struck out recently. He just keeps on getting on. He keeps scoring runs. What's it been like to watch him recently?
Not only does he keep scoring runs, Jesse, he keeps knocking in runs from the leadoff spot. Had two RBIs last night in the Wild 11-10 loss. He kept the Blue Jays in it there in the late innings. I think he knocked in a couple of runs in the 11th inning that ended up being the only two runs we scored that frame. But Rivera is tremendous. You can plug him in any outfield position, and he's going to do a tremendous job out there. He gets on base. He's got a great low ball read. Anything in the dirt, breaking pitch or otherwise, he is heading to second. And he's such a spark in that lineup. You know, sometimes he takes a quick approach, a little too aggressive for a leadoff guy. Sometimes you want him to see a little few more pitches so the guys behind him can kind of get a feel of what's on the mound. But other than that, Rivera, he gets this offense going. Anytime, you know, you look at the lineup card and you say, okay, Rivera's coming up this half inning, you've got to feel good about your chances of putting at least one run on the board.
He is at Z_Helton on Twitter. Zach Helton's the voice of the Bluefield Blue Jays. Zach, thank you very much.
Jesse, as always, it's a pleasure, my man.
Oh, you've got it. And from Zach in Bluefield, let's go right up the ladder to AA New Hampshire. Let me bring in Bob Lippman. Bob, how are you?
I'm doing great, Jesse. How's everything going for you today?
Everything's going very well. Let's talk about your headliners. I've got guys in mind, and let's begin with another great game the other day for Riley Adams. How's the big catcher looking?
Well, nothing wrong with the game. We came up with three hits, gave us the lead in the fifth inning at Akron yesterday where we were trying to sweep for the first time ever. His home run gave the Fisher Cats a 5-4 lead. Unfortunately, we gave up two right back in the bottom of the fifth inning and lost to the Rubber Ducks, but has really looked good throughout another runner trying to steal, and the bat has been productive, so it was nice to get that sixth home run of the year in yesterday's game.
You know, everybody's wondering about Nate Pearson. What have you seen from him recently?
I've seen everything that we had come to expect from this true talent. Jesse, he's really, really good. And two starts back, didn't give up a hit for us against Harrisburg. Did not give up a run again in his last start the other day, and now we'll be coming back on Sunday afternoon here against Erie. Be matched up against probably the best team that he has faced all season long here, and we'll see how he can do. But just the way that he's pitching off of that fastball now, starting to become a complete pitcher, and I think now that the Blue Jays are kind of they're relaxing his pitch count, which had been 75 up to 90, I think he's going to be free to throw 100 this week, and it'll be fun to see how far he gets.
All right, so 90 pitches, 100 pitches, the leash is off. It's let's see how deep he can go.
Yeah, exactly. And again, I think that most of you who would be listening in are well aware that he struck by a line drive on his forearm last year, and the Blue Jays were very, very careful with Nate. He has had a healthy season, although it's been tough to really measure the gains that he's made, because sometimes he's only been allowed to go two innings and then he's gone five innings and then he's gone two. But now, you know, he made it five and two thirds in that no hit game a couple back. He got six innings the other day, and he's right there now. See if he can get six, maybe even seven.
Another member of your starting rotation, Joey Murray. At the start of the season, Nate Pearson's on everybody's tongues. He's one of the greatest pitching prospects in the minor leagues, and he just keeps on establishing himself. Nobody would say at the start of the season, Joey Murray is going to be one of the Jays' top pitching prospects this season. He's put himself out there. He's starting again for you tonight. What have you seen from Joey in AA?
Well, I've only seen one of Joey's starts, and really the first time that he went out was unfair to measure anything, because he only faced three batters, and then rains came and the game got suspended, so the Blue Jays decided to bring him back after a couple of days and let him go there. What I really liked about Joey's start at home last weekend against Reading, and he was a 2-0 loser, so nothing bad to say there, is he got in a little trouble. There was a balk and a wild pitch, and Reading scored a couple of runs, but he battled right back, ended up with five straight strikeouts, and finished the outing with nine. And you're right, certainly the trajectory is pretty good. And again, as I mentioned, we're playing Erie tonight, and they're the club with the best record in the second half in the Eastern League. It'll be a formidable lineup, and he'll be matched up against a first rounder in Alex Faedo tonight for Erie. So it's a pretty good test, and we'll see how it goes for Joey.
Yes, sir. And lastly, Bob, I wanted to ask you about Kevin Smith, who had such a great month of July. Has he turned his season around?
Yeah, boy, let's hope so. And I really hope that he can make August look like July did, because there was no offensive player in the Eastern League who was more productive in the month of July, the whole league. And Kevin added 20, 25 points. His batting average finally got it up over 200. He was one off of the franchise record for home runs in the month. He hit 8 in the month. And, you know, this is, I think, kind of what we expected from Kevin Smith at the beginning of the season. Now the offense is there. It's helping the team play better. And let's hope August follows the July path for Kevin Smith.
That's so good to hear. Bob Lippman, voice of the New Hampshire Fisher Cats, on the road with the Fisher Cats, who are just in Akron, and they keep on moseying. Joey Murray on the mound today. Bob, thank you very much.
Take care, everybody. Get out and see a game soon.
Yes, sir. And from Bob, let me bring in Adam Jacks, who calls Lansing Lugnuts games with me. And Adam is on the scene right now as the Lugnuts are playing wiffle ball. Adam, what's the score?
Oh, Jesse, it is all position players right now. We're at Lake Health Miracle Park, just northwest of Classic Park here in East Lake. Home run from Griffin Conine, Rafael Antigua. We got a sack fly, but so far, an Otto Lopez line drive right center field home run. It was smashed. And I got to be honest with you, Jesse, I'm not seeing many hits for the pitching staff, and they're getting wallops right now. So it's all position players out here in the sun in this pregame wiffle ball contest.
Who's on the mound for the position players?
Right now, we've had a couple of guys. It started out with Johnny Aiello. Reggie Pruitt, the acting manager for the position players, pulled him. He pulled a Trevor Bauer and threw the ball over the center field wall. He couldn't believe he'd been taken out. I mean, just remarkable stuff here.
And who of the pitching staff is getting lit up?
Well, there's been a combination. Troy Miller's on the hill right now. We got a line drive homer right here from Brian Gold. I mean, that's a three-run shot. Position players just dominating. They've got the bragging rights going on right now. But it's been a combination. I mean, whoever they throw out there, Pardino started the game. Just no one has been able to shut down the position players, and they've been playing long ball all afternoon.
Breaking news, Ryan Gold goes yard. Adam Jacks are watching pregame wiffle ball from the Lansing Lugnuts before tonight's game against the Lake County Captains. There's a miracle field for disadvantaged kids. It's a wonderful field that is out beyond the left field wall at Classic Park in Lake County, and Dallas McPherson had it arranged, a trade to get the Lugnuts playing out there today. Adam, let's talk about the Lugnuts' recent spate of, you know, the big league ball, the hardball action. How about Griffin Conine recently?
Yeah, Griffin has been great, Jesse. Outside of his home run that he just hit here in the wiffle ball contest, that'd be 4 home runs in his last 5 games. Unfortunately, that doesn't count towards his Midwest League total. But, I mean, the guy's up with 16 home runs through 52 games. He's top 3 in the Midwest League behind Chris Betts and Will Benson, who have both played significantly more games. He just went through a stretch, too, where strikeouts were coming. He didn't look confident up at the plate. A lot of swings and misses, but he's figured it out against South Bend. He gets a home run, and he's continued it here in Lake County as he had a double home run yesterday. And the home run 2 days ago, it was one of the longest we have seen. We continue to say that about Conine. It seems like every single home run he hits goes further and further. But cleared the video board out in right center here in Lake County over the billboards that they have. He has had some really powerful swings and no doubt showcasing he's the most powerful bat on this Lansing Lugnuts team.
What do you make of the Lugnuts' road success the second half?
Well, it doesn't make a ton of sense because you look at the first half, Lansing was playing much better at home. They struggled on the road, and then it all changed at the end of the first half. And for those that have been to Cooley Law School Stadium, we know it's a hitter's park, which plays to the Lugnuts. They've got a lot of intriguing bats in their lineup that are capable of going deep, getting extra base hits. But for whatever reason, the runs have not come at home. But when they go out on the road, they have really had success scoring early, and then they've got good pitching performances as well. So this team has been loose and playing well away from home, and it's continued to have success in the second half.
Right. Speaking with Adam Jacks about this Lansing Lugnuts squad that is entering play today, wrapping up a 4-game series with the Lake County Captains, Sean Weimer on the mound. Adam, anything else that has stood out to you from this past last week's worth of Lugnuts action?
No, I think it's just continuing this road trip that they're on right now, four games against Lake County. They've won two of the first three. Series wraps up tonight, and then you go to Bowling Green for four. This is the longest remaining road trip on the schedule, and you and I talked about it. We're going to find out a lot about where this Lansing team is in terms of position, in terms of position for playoffs. They were a couple games out heading onto this road trip, and these are two teams that are above them in the standings. So it'll be interesting to see how they play the rest of this road trip, and then once they get back at home, just a month to go in the season, and they're right there in playoff contention.
Adam Jacks, who joins me calling Lansing Lugnuts games and is right now taking in wiffle ball. Adam, get back to your game that you're watching right there. Let's see who can pull it off if the pitchers have a comeback in store. Thank you very much.
You got it, Jesse. I tell you what, position players are just in charge right now. These pitchers, they got to get something going, or it's going to be a long trip to Bowling Green. A lot of smack talk going on out here.
I love it. At Adam Jaxa on Twitter is Adam's Twitter handle. Adam, watching the wiffle ball pregame, they're having fun. They're having a lot of fun. This is Around the Nest, Jay talking away around the Toronto Blue Jays organization. Back to the acquisitions. The Blue Jays traded David Phelps to the Chicago Cubs to pick up Tom Hatch, a right-hander. And so, why not ask the Tennessee voice, the voice of the Tennessee Smokies, Mick Gillespie, about the new Jays right-hander. Hello to Mick Gillespie.
Well, it's good to talk to you, Jesse. As far as Thomas Hatch, you got a pitcher that brings three pitches to the arsenal, fastball, slider, and changeup. His slider is really good. He didn't use it a lot in the first half. Got off to an extremely quick start. His first two games, he allowed like maybe three hits and no runs, and then ran into a lot of trouble, started using the slider more, and found success. It wasn't really an easy season for him, but his fastball can get up, you know, 93, 94, 95, and then he's got the really good slider, you know, and then throws the changeup occasionally. But he was the Cubs' only pick, really their first pick in 2016. Now, it's because they made deals with free agents and lost both of their picks. They got John Lackey, and then they got Jason Hayward. So he was their first pick. So I know they really liked him out of Oklahoma State. They really hoped that he would get to the major leagues. And so they're at that point now where they're trying to bolster the big league team. This is someone that the Cubs definitely thought had a future in MLB.
You had him all of last year too, in addition to this year. How has he developed between when you first saw him last year and now currently?
Well, I mean, you know, out on the mound, I mean, he looks about the same. He just throws more sliders. He's more mature now, though. I mean, you could tell that he was starting to take a leadership role amongst the pitchers, and he was someone that was very reliable. You know, he didn't miss many starts. Now, he has been limited as far as his pitch count goes lately. He actually pitched in yesterday's game, which was Monday, July 29th, and he only pitched 60 pitches, but he was excellent again. You know, he pitched 3 1/3 innings, only gave up three hits and a run. He gave up a home run on the first pitch of the game, and then after that, he got locked in. He had a lot of trouble this season and even last season in the early innings, kind of getting loose, and he would give up runs early and then stick around and make a good outing out of it. So I think consistency is a big thing for him. But, you know, when you talk to people who know the game, they feel like, you know, if he's able to kind of put things together a little bit more, that he could be a starter in the big leagues, if not a reliever.
The game that really jumps out to me in looking over his day-by-day, his game log, is on July the 3rd against Birmingham, the 10 strikeouts in the 6 2/3 innings. Is that as good as he has looked to you this season?
Yeah, he had a really good game. And again, when the hitters go after his slider, when they can't lay off of it, it can be on certain nights just about untouchable. And that was one of those games for him. And then all of a sudden his fastball gets a lot better. When he's able to elevate his fastball and he can keep it up in the zone, above bat path, swing paths, he's really good. When he gets in trouble is when his fastball drops down in the zone, and then all of a sudden those balls that are, you know, maybe fouled back or missed become put in play in a lot of hard contact. So that's just my perspective of him, you know. And when I watch him throw what I would call a four-seam fastball, where he's able to keep it up and kind of get those strikes in the top of the zone and then even take it elevated higher and get those swings and misses. He can be really tough because the slider is so good.
And finally, Mick, what is he like around the clubhouse? What's he like as a guy?
Yeah, he's a good guy. Really nice kid. He's from Tulsa, Oklahoma, went to Jenks High School. That's a big-time baseball program there. You always seem to run into someone that he played with in college, another Cowboy, or in high school. You know, so he's been around baseball for a long time. But he's a nice guy, you know, really humble, kind of, you know, sticks to himself. You know, he's not super outgoing, but when you talk to him, it's always an enjoyable conversation. And, you know, he's a worker. He's a hardworking kid. He goes out there and does his job every day. And he takes baseball as a profession seriously. And you can tell that by the way that he prepares himself for starts.
Mick Gillespie can be found on Twitter at Broadcaster Mick. And Mick and I co-host the Ballpark Digest Broadcaster Chat. We're very familiar with each other. You listen in, and we tell all sorts of great stories and discuss the world of baseball as a whole. Mick, it's good talking baseball with you on a specific basis, finding out what kind of player that the Blue Jays just acquired. Thank you very much. From one pre-recorded interview to another, and we've saved probably the prospect who is the most highly regarded that the Jays acquired at the deadline for last. Simeon Woods Richardson, not hyphenated, as we learned from his mother, is a pitcher who's only 18 years of age. He's out of Texas. He was acquired in the Marcus Stroman deal along with Anthony Kay. While Kay is up at AAA, Woods Richardson was pitching for the Columbia Fireflies, and then hours before he was traded, he was promoted to A-Advance St. Lucie, and then he was dealt to Toronto, and now he's a member of the Dunedin Blue Jays. So I spoke with the voice of the Columbia Fireflies. Hello to Kevin Fitzgerald.
Jesse, it's great to talk with you, my friend. Hope you're doing well.
All right, let's get this in. Let's get right to the point. The Blue Jays just traded for him, in addition to Anthony Kay, with Simeon Woods Richardson. Who are the Blue Jays getting?
Yeah, I think they're getting two players that are not afraid of the moment. They're not afraid to fail. They just kind of are wired that way, and I'm sure you understand kind of the player that I'm describing. This has been interesting for me, Jesse. I've actually just been in the middle of a pretty large story about Simeon, just looking into his background, his love for baseball. I've talked to a lot of folks around him in the last couple of days, and sure enough, this happened. So I've really gotten to know him and just the type of player he is, not from only watching him, but just from speaking to him and so many others about his game. There is a maturity to him. He is 18 years old, sure. But I think the Blue Jays are certainly getting, without question, a future major leaguer for sure. You kind of figure out what sort of a major leaguer someone like Woods Richardson is going to be in the coming years, in these formative years as a minor leaguer. But he's just a very mature person at the age of 18. He's a sponge, and trust me, I've seen it. He wants to learn. He has a love of learning. His one of his coaches from where he grew up in Houston, Texas, was Adam Dunn, the all-star, the home run hitter. He coached him in summer ball, and he's like, I can just see the love to learn and the work ethic. He was telling me about this not long ago. Like, that's Major League DNA. Dunn goes, he reminds me of Jake Peavy, just that bulldog mentality. So there are plenty of examples of how he just has this love to learn and he wants to work. It really is. He's very much like Marcus Stroman, kind of the, I'm going to prove you wrong. I'm not afraid of the moment. And it's not an arrogance, but it's a confidence. And I think it's the right amount of confidence that the Blue Jays are getting here in Woods Richardson.
You mentioned that you were looking into his story and talking to people. What started you thinking that you needed to profile his background?
Yeah, that's a great question, Jesse. We had at the beautiful home of the Columbia Fireflies, as you mentioned, Segra Park. We had a Negro League celebration weekend not long ago. It was a few weeks ago back in June. And I walk into the clubhouse. Now, Columbia, our team, the Mets single-A affiliate, we were wearing uniforms honoring an old Negro League team. The Fireflies were going to wear the Newark Eagles jerseys, Newark, New Jersey, an old team that was based up there. And I walk into the clubhouse. Simeon was starting. It lined up that he was starting on the day that we would be wearing these uniforms, and he flags me down. I can see the excitement. He's like, hey, make sure you get some photos of me. Like, this means a lot to me, Simeon, being an African-American pitcher. He's like, look, it's being, you know, stepping on a major league mound as a pitcher, as an African-American means a lot to me. And you know, he first initially asked, hey, can you just take some photos? And I'd love to share them with my family. And I started asking, well, this is great. I mean, and he started telling me that being on that mound for him means a lot. And again, it's not from an egotistical standpoint. It's from, he knows baseball's history. He loves the game. He's not a video game guy. He loves baseball, which I always appreciate. And I said to him, hey, Simeon, can we sit down? And we started talking about his past. And so to answer your question, that is what got me saying, you know, I really want to learn more about this person. See, Marcus Stroman is his favorite player. And now he is in a trade with Marcus Stroman. So Woods Richardson has an appreciation for the game. He knows the history. He wrote an essay about African-American pitchers in Major League Baseball when he was a senior in high school. So I think, you know, he's a well-rounded individual who's more mature than the average 18-year-old. I think that's another example why.
How did you see him develop from the very start of the year forward up until his promotion and then trade?
He worked on his changeup. Any former major leaguer, any current major leaguer, any coach that you and I have worked with in minor league baseball over the years will tell you, especially pitching coaches, look, the changeup is going to be your best friend, and it has been for him over the last couple months. I remember the first outing, and you know, Royce Ring, start of the year as our pitching coach, he was in the bigs for a number of years and with the Mets at one point. But he has since gotten a promotion, if you will, to the Mets AAA affiliate. But guess who's been our pitching coach? Josh Towers is his name, and he pitched all those years with the Blue Jays. Josh has been our pitching coach.
Control Towers.
Absolutely. He's a great guy, and both of them mentioned the same thing, that he has, you know, more so Royce because he saw his first month in Columbia, but there's just a willingness to throw that pitch for strikes, to use it to get batters out. We've seen it, myself and my broadcast partner, Pat DeMar, you know, where we're calling the game. So we can see it, I think, as you go throughout a year, you want to develop. I think that's been one example. And now, Jesse, this is his age 18 season. There is so much more development, but I think one small example is that, and he has used those pitches to get that third strike. He's got a great fastball. He's got a live arm. And this is that level where you learn, all right, how else can you get batters out? You know, sometimes they're gonna foul that fastball off, and then they're going to get a hit. Do you have another pitch? That's where I think he has developed, no question, kind of on such a small scale, considering he's going to have a long career this season for sure.
I'm looking over his game logs with you. May 1st, 5 runs and 3 1/3. May 6th, 5 runs and 2 innings. May 12th, 5 runs and 3 1/3. May 17th, 6 runs, that in 4 innings. And then after that, it is felt, especially in the second half of this year, that he has turned it on. Is that because of the maturation of his changeup, or is that also including other factors?
I think it really does. It's just the commanding of 3 pitches as opposed to I want to throw the fastball every pitch in this at bat for sure. That plays into it. But you know what's neat about, you listed a bunch of starts, and he certainly went through a stretch of games where, yeah, he was giving up 4 or 5 per outing, and you know, the Mets didn't want him to go any more than 4 or 5 innings anyway, so that's why he really did not have a longer leash from that standpoint. But the demeanor exiting the slope, you know, exiting the game after the 5-run outing and the 5-shutout inning outing, identical. It really was identical. And you have to have a level of that. There's a balance, right? You don't want to be complacent like, I'm a second-round draft pick, I'm 18 years old, I'm allowed to give up 5 runs. I'm good, right? Like, there's a level of complacency. You cannot let the 5-run outing bother you, which he doesn't. Nor does he fall complacent with it, meaning he goes right to the tape. He's watching film of the start. He's breaking it down. What did I do wrong? What did I do right? That's just preparation. you and I have seen it. The players that put in the necessary preparation as they move throughout the minor leagues are the ones that are going to elevate themselves, and that's just with their play, no question about it. So he has the mental fortitude to handle poor starts, but also the urgency to get better, you know, to see what went wrong, what did I do. He doesn't let it affect him. He still wants to go out there, and he doesn't shy away from competition when he still has allowed five runs out there on any given day. So it's really neat from that standpoint. The demeanor and the preparation just don't change. I think that's major league DNA.
The former voice of the Bluefield Blue Jays, the current voice of the Columbia Fireflies. You can find Kevin Fitzgerald on Twitter at Kevin T. Fitz. Big, big thanks for lending your insight on the Blue Jays' new acquisition, Simeon Woods Richardson. Thank you, Kevin.
Hey, glad to talk with you. Cooley Law School Stadium, still one of my favorite ballparks. Good to talk with you, Jesse.
And now it is time to wind up Around the Nest for another week. You heard from Kevin Fitzgerald in Columbia, Mick Gillespie in Tennessee, Michael Tricarico in Syracuse, and Eric Bramer, Bramer working in Potomac. Those are your special guest stars this week. Rob Fay in Vancouver, Adam Jackson in Lansing, Zach Helton in Bluefield, Jim Taraboki in Dunedin, and Bob Lippman in New Hampshire. Your regular, what they would call that, the stars just normally, right? The core cast of this show. I'm Jesse Goldberg-Strassler at JGoldStrass on Twitter. Big thanks to Hayden Godfrey out of the minor leaguer working through Bluebird Banter. That way you can post, you can ask us any questions, you can offer any comments. We are always trying to work to make this show better for you because we are trying to learn the same way. This helps us, this helps you. It all works together at Around Nest on Twitter for the entire show. Thank you very much for tuning in. Thank you for listening in. Thank you for keeping us company. Until next week, you know what? Enjoy the baseball.